with each other. He may never have perfected the musical artificial intelligence of his electronium, but he prepared the way for the computers and algorithms that are now busily at work on the soundtrack of the 21st century. Welcome to Raymond Scott's world.
This week's Sunday feature, Rewiring Raymond Scott, was presented by Ken Hollings and produced by Dan Shepherd. It was a Far Shoreline production for BBC Radio 3, and all of our Sunday features are available as podcasts on BBC Sounds.
On BBC One this Christmas,
we're going to the Outer Hebrides.
The Outer Hebrides?
The team at Nanata's house travel afar.
I've got room for my rollers and my lacquer, but not both.
Taking modest shelter.
There must be 700 years of mist, damp and misery seeping out of these walls.
Bearing gifts.
A bottle of pale ale and a chocolate tool set.
And tending to the baby.
He's the most beautiful little boy you ever did see.
Call the midwife.
Merry Christmas!
On Christmas Day at 7 on BBC One.
Later this evening on BBC Radio 3, a portrait of Sir David Wilcox, who was born 100 years ago this month. That's at 9:30. But now, just after 7:30, this week's Drama on 3. Throw another log on the fire and gather around the tree, but whatever you do, don't open the door. David Haig stars as a stranger who gatecrashes a family Christmas in a comic and unsettling play for the shortest day of the year. Winter Solstice by the German playwright Roland Schimmelpfennig is introduced by its translator, and this programme contains strong language.
I'm David Tushingham, and I'm a dramaturg who specialises in German theatre. I translated this play, which is by one of my favourite writers, Roland Schimmelpfennig, Germany's most performed living playwright. What I like about his work is its lucidity, its humour, and his gift for storytelling. Roland's plays show us a Germany that's modern and diverse, and they do this in ways that go beyond realism, playing with our perception of time and our notion of reality. The play you'll hear tonight, Winter Solstice, was written against the background of a shift in German politics with the rise of a new populist party, Alternative for Germany. And when its opening in London just happened to coincide with Donald Trump's inauguration, its topicality was hard to ignore. But this play is also about the importance of the past. It's set at Christmas, a time when we like to feel that the past, that tradition, is something comforting and kind. But if you look more closely, the past is also vicious and cruel. It's the night before Christmas, and it's freezing. No one wants to be outside on a night like this. Indoors, though, everything's cosy and warm. Albert and Bettina, our main characters, are cultured people, with a beautiful old apartment full of books and paintings and delicious wine. Their life seems perfect, except, of course, it's not. There are a lot of tensions underneath the surface and a lot of secrets. Then, on top of all this, a stranger turns up at the door. He's charming, he's talented, and yet there are hints of something far more sinister about him, particularly in the context of German history, and particularly for Albert, who is writing a book about Christmas in Auschwitz. Albert's really spooked by this guy. He starts to wonder, who have I let into my home? And just what is it we're actually celebrating here? Winter Solstice by Roland Schimmelpfennig.
Albert and Bettina, both more than eager to take offence.
Why can't you say hello to your mother? Why don't you just say hello to your mother? Why is it always me who has to do it?
It was urgent. I had to talk.
Every time she comes through the door, you either run off somewhere or you won't get off the phone.
I couldn't. I had the producer.
I'm left standing there with her.
If I can't get the producer.
I get left standing with her making small talk, and I hate small talk.
Piano music. Chopin. Nocturne number 2. Winter. It's evening. Warm light. Outside, it's night. It's a very cold northern night. And outside the large windows, it's snowing.
Why can't you just say hello to her?
I couldn't say hello.
Don't say anything to her and leave me standing there with her.
The producer was more important. You wouldn't make your editor...
You producer. He hates that word. And he knows it wasn't the producer she was talking to. It was someone else. His angry face. Her angry face. Outside, snow falls through circles of light cast by the city street lamps. They argue, but they argue in hushed voices, so her mother won't hear them, or their daughter either.
The producer was more important. You wouldn't make your editor...
You mean more important? You always do this. Do you think she doesn't notice? Do you think I don't notice? Do you think Marie doesn't notice?
Oh, come on.
And it's like this every time, every time.
What's it got to do with you?
I'm not doing this anymore. No, that's it. I'm not doing this anymore. That was the last time.
You know something?
What?
Screw you!
A wealthy, middle-class living room in our time. An old building. Europe. The people who live here have taste. They skillfully combine old and modern. They have plenty of money, but things don't have to be perfect. IKEA meets Biedermeier and Charles Eames and the flea market. They read books. They have gone to university.
Screw you! Just keep out of it!
Keep out of it? How am I supposed to keep out of it? I'm the one standing there in the corridor with her. Me, not you. You're on the phone. It's a matter of politeness. A matter of respect.
High ceilings. Double doors. A lot of space. A lot of books. An old piano. The people who live here have never voted for a Conservative Party in their lives. They are no older than mid-40s, but could be younger. They've arrived where they wanted to get to. On one wall, there's a large oil painting, the work of a friend. A large, expressive work. It's hard to tell what the work represents. Several human bodies, perhaps. Pain, desire, dependence, injuries.
It's a matter of politeness, a matter of respect.
Politeness and respect. Bettina's eyes narrow with anger at these words. Bettina and Albert have an 8-year-old child, a girl, Marie.
My mother and I left all manner of politeness and all manner of respect behind us a long time ago. Don't you worry about that.
All manner. She says all manner. He, Albert, is a publisher, sociologist, historian, and a respected essayist. Sometimes he writes fiction, short stories. He's the classic intellectual. Casual, careless, with glasses. Seeming to lack vanity, but vain at the same time. Bettina is slim, good-looking, creative, highly intelligent, an elegant woman. Even if this evening she's just wearing a pair of jeans and a white t-shirt. Bettina has many talents, perhaps too many. She has worked as a writer, a dancer, a stage designer, an illustrator. But now she's doing what she has really wanted to do for years. She directs her own films. These are clever, sometimes uncomfortable and unusual films, which are therefore difficult to market, not for mass audiences.
But what's it even got to do with you? What's it got to do
it's
with you?
To do with me when you go creeping off?
Creeping off? It was an important call. They want to change the script. They say it's too...
There's always somebody who wants to change the script. A producer, an editor. It's lacking aggression, the producer said. Make it more like the end of the world, the producer said.
They want to change the script. They say it's
too... It has to do with me when you go and leave me alone with her.
And if I haven't done it by...
Yes, but not by today.
By today. I'm right up against it here.
What should I do?
I. All she ever says is I, Albert thinks.
I just not open the door. Or should I open the door when she rings the bell, unlike you, and then leave her standing alone, out on the stairs? How humiliating.
At the same time in the bathroom, in the mirror, the face of a woman, in her mid-60s or maybe older, Bettina's mother, Corinna. An impressive vision. A strong woman, the Nordic type. She is putting on lipstick. At the same time, in the living room.
How humiliating.
Corinna comes to visit 2 or 3 times a year. She comes by train from another city. Usually the mood between mother and daughter is very tense at the beginning of these visits. It is then alleviated with the help of good and expensive wine, but later, by the third day at the latest, there is an argument. Today is day one. Corinna has just arrived. It is 6:15 p.m.
Well, I could do that. I could just leave her standing in the corridor, but you know what would happen then. You don't do things like that. I don't do things like that. For Marie's sake, too. She is her grandmother, after all.
By January.
Marie is happy.
If Bettina hasn't started filming by January or February at the very latest, the film is dead because the film is set in winter. It's a winter film.
Marie is happy.
The warm light of the living room. Outside, more snow is falling, and snow will continue to fall all night. There is nobody out there. It is Saturday, the 24th of December. Tomorrow is Christmas Day.
She's happy, as you might imagine. She's only got one grandmother.
Bettina looks past Albert at the books on the shelves behind him. The books that he has written in the last 20 years. One every couple of years. Sometimes two. Extermination. The Future of the Past. An Incomplete History of Human Experiments. Dictatorship and Death. Human Dignity. And his first collection of short stories, When We Loved Each Other.
She's happy, as you might imagine. She's only got one grandmother, and you leave her standing outside.
In recent years, she's stopped reading his books, but she knows what's in them, or she thinks she knows.
So Marie should at least have some contact with her one grandmother, and we should at least let the woman in.
Albert's mother died 5 years ago in France in a swimming accident on the Atlantic coast. His father committed suicide when Albert was still a child.
Bettina!
The grandmother shouts from the bathroom. A rough voice. A powerful voice. One feels one can hear her entire life, which has not been an easy one. Cigarettes, alcohol. A voice which shifts between accusation and self-defense, self-assurance and inadequacy, enthusiasm and fear.
Bettina!
Yes!
We got any soap? We have got soap.
We've got soap! It's where the soap always is.
Have you asked her how long she's staying?
How am I supposed to do that?
Ask, it's quite simple.
You ask her.
I can't ask her.
Neither can I. She's your mother, and it's Christmas.
And she didn't say anything?
No.
What?
No.
So she did say something. She said something.
She asked what our plans are for Marie's birthday.
Albert should have told Bettina straight away, but he didn't.
So she's staying till Marie's birthday?
Well, that's not for a fortnight.
And it means we'll have her in the house on New Year's Eve, like last year, just like last year.
We've got people coming on New Year's Eve. Guests, friends. She offends people, especially people she doesn't know and who are important. Especially women who are younger than her and these women's partners, basically everyone.
Because you didn't ask her.
What?
Because you're too much of a coward.
Excuse me, I am not a coward. Coward.
You can't stand conflict.
I opened the door to her. It's Christmas. You invited her. You invited her several times on the phone.
I've been drinking.
You get drunk and then you get sentimental and then you invite her without making it clear how long.
You can't make it clear. If you set a limit, she feels unwelcome.
She's just had a 6-hour train journey. A train got stuck in the middle of nowhere, in the snow. And then the heating failed.
Oh, of course.
She arrives here half frozen and I'm supposed to chuck her out before she's unpacked her suitcase.
Why can't you open your mouth? Why can't you just open your mouth for once?
Something smashes somewhere at the back of the large apartment. A noise like a glass being dropped. A look between the two of them.
What was that?
Bettina shouts again.
What was that?
No answer. It is 6:20 p.m.
You didn't even say anything when our daughter fell through the ice when she went skating.
No one fell through the ice.
First she offends our guests, and then she practically kills our daughter.
She's your mother, not mine.
This is your family. Do you want your daughter and me to be spending Christmas, New Year's Eve and her birthday with that woman?
That woman?
Is that what you want?
The doorbell rings. It is an old-fashioned, wealthy, middle-class doorbell.
Who is it? Who is it?
No idea.
Can you open it, Marie? Marie, can you hear me? Can you open it?
Marie is their child. She always runs to the door when the bell rings, like a dog. Bettina thinks every time, like a dog. And Bettina wonders whether this is a cruel thought or a loving one. For a moment, there is silence. Then Marie shouts, "No, I can't. I'm in the bathroom with Grandma. She's got a new dress." Her grandmother's voice, "Well, you are a one. That was supposed to be a surprise." The doorbell rings again.
"Are you expecting anybody?"
"It could be the postman."
"The postman? At this time?"
"Or comrade."
"Marie, please open the door. Maybe Father Christmas got the day wrong."
The child shouts cheerfully, "All right." She runs out of the bathroom along the corridor to the entrance hall. Light, exuberant, happy child steps. The little girl is pulling something along the corridor behind her. A piece of string with something tied onto it. An old toothbrush that rattles across the floorboards. Her horse. She calls it her horse. "Come on! Come on, horsey!" the girl shouts.
"Conrad said he might pop in later."
Conrad. Conrad is the painter who painted the large expressive picture, a friend of the family. Conrad and Albert have been friends since they were children. The girl shouts excitedly and cheerfully from the hallway, "Daddy! Daddy! We've got a visitor!" Albert is pleased she is so excited. To the girl, everything is special. Her grandmother's visit, Christmas tomorrow, and in a fortnight she will be 8. He shouts,
"What? Who is it? Who's there?"
The girl running, the toothbrush on a string clattering. Her horse, like a dog, her mother thinks. The child shouts as she goes, a visitor, I don't know who." Door slamming.
"Yes, but who is it? Who's come, Marie?"
Marie, further off in the depths of the apartment. "Grandma, Grandma, we've got a visitor."
"What?"
Bettina knows her mother's voice. She can hear when her mother is lying. She can hear it straight away, and her mother lies a lot. But why should her mother be lying now?
"Really? A visitor now? Who on earth can that be?"
Albert turns to go to the front door. Someone is already standing between the large, half-open double doors into the living room. A slim, good-looking man with a charming smile. The man knocks carefully 4 times on the frame of the door. Knock, 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 knock. Albert is startled.
"Who are you?"
The man is perhaps in his mid-60s or even a little older. He wears a grey suit and a heavy overcoat. He has an old suitcase. Perhaps a hat, too. He creates the slight impression of coming from another time. He smiles regretfully.
Excuse me for just walking in here, but the child opened the door and then the light on the stairs went out. What a splendid, beautiful staircase. Wonderful, these old buildings. And I couldn't find the light switch, so I was standing there in the dark, and I didn't want you not to be able to see me when you...
What?
My name is Rudolph.
The man looks as if he has had a long journey. He is holding a small piece of paper which he twists nervously between his fingers. This is clearly not the reception he had anticipated.
"You must excuse me. I'm looking for..."
From the depths of the apartment, Bettina's mother shouts,
"Bettina, haven't you got any towels?"
It's not the first time she's been here. She knows where the towels are kept.
"Yes, Mother, we do have towels. Just have a look and you'll find them."
A trace of relief in the stranger's face, which Albert spots without knowing what it means yet.
I'm looking for... I'd like to see Gudrun."
"Who? Gudrun? Gudrun? What Gudrun?"
"She gave me this address. This is the right place, isn't it?"
There's no Gudrun living here."
"He wants to see my mother. You want to see my mother."
"But your mother's not called Gudrun."
"Yes, she is."
"Corinna? Corinna's called Gudrun."
"Her middle name is Gudrun."
"Gudrun?
Is she here?"
"Mother! Mother, you have a visitor!"
"She invited me."
"Invited you?"
"My name is Rudolph, Rudolph Meyer. But call me Rudolph. Pleased to meet you."
"She said nothing to me."
"Oh, when did she have the chance?"
"Why?"
Albert offers Rudolph his hand, an uncertain handshake.
"I'm... Albert."
I can tell I've come at an inconvenient time. I'll be on my way. I just wanted... because I did promise..."
No, only I... we didn't know that..."
"Perhaps if I could just quickly..."
Albert looks at Bettina. Bettina shrugs her shoulders. Why doesn't she do anything? Thinks Albert.
"Corinna!"
No answer.
You must excuse us. We weren't expecting you. Corinna!
Yes? I'm in the bathroom.
There's a visitor here to see you. You've got a visitor.
A visitor? For me? Really?
Bettina thinks. That tone of voice.
Really? Who on earth can that be? I'll be right there.
They all wait. Albert would like to say something, but he doesn't know what.
Well?
Corinna comes hastily into the living room. Corinna has changed her clothes and put on makeup. She sees Rudolph.
Oh, what a surprise! How lovely of you to come.
It is 6:27 p.m.
How do you know this man?
Know him?
6:38 p.m. 10 minutes later, in the kitchen. Bettina and Corinna. It is a very large kitchen dining room. A heavy dining table 10 feet long.
Know him? Well, I don't really know him at all.
Corinna wants to underplay the whole thing. She knows her daughter is going to criticise her.
You don't know him? You invited him?
Yes, of course I invited him. He said he was...
Corinna is in urgent need of a drink. She repeatedly places the 4 empty wine glasses on the table and then picks them back up again. The table. When Albert and Bettina first saw it in a furniture shop 15 years ago, they couldn't afford it. But over the following years, they began to earn some money, and eventually Albert bought it. Light wood. A very beautiful lamp over the table. Actually, an old hanging lantern. The kitchen cupboards are partly modern and partly old, a successfully improvised combination like in the living room. The child's drawings on the cupboards. Photos, lists, a timetable, a large fridge with magnets stuck to it, magnetic sushi pieces, magnetic words which you can use to make sentences. Marie sometimes plays with them. Albert and Bettina haven't made a sentence with these magnets for a long time.
How? How what?
How do you know him?
Why does she always have to force me into a corner? Why can't she just leave me alone? Corinna thinks. She thinks, what did I do to her? Bettina sees her mother's new dress. The dress was expensive, and later her mother will complain, as she always does, about not having any money. It occurs to Bettina that the dress is a colour called petrol. She remembers how Conrad, her husband's best and oldest friend, wanted to explain the shades of blue to her, the names of the different colours, in his studio one afternoon a few weeks ago, and that she'd said, let's not talk about colours.
We sat opposite each other.
Where?
On the train.
On the train?
Corinna speaks as if she has done something forbidden, as if she is sharing a secret. In this way, she's trying to make her daughter smile, and Bettina knows this, but it's too early to give in.
On the train.
On the train? On what train?
On the train this afternoon.
Oh, you met him this afternoon?
Yes.
You've invited someone you met on the train? I can't believe it. Today? It's Christmas.
But tomorrow. Tomorrow is Christmas. And he had nowhere to go. And there were no more trains. None. Because of the snow. There's absolutely nothing.
Now she starts just slightly twisting things, dramatising them. It's not Christmas today, it's tomorrow. The mother feels her daughter's rejection in every word. If it was up to her daughter, Corinna thinks, she could just as well die of starvation and thirst.
He's got nobody. Like me.
There it is. Her tendency towards self-pity and veiled criticism. The bitter lines around her mouth. On the other hand, it's true. Corinna is lonely. She had hoped to be more involved in the family when Marie was born.
In other words, you have no idea who he is.
Yes, I do. We did talk to each other. And then the train got stuck in the snow and the heating went off because the engine broke down. And then he offered me his coat, a beautiful old long heavy coat like they used to have. And I liked that. And I said, how chivalrous. And he looked at me and said, chivalrous. I haven't heard that word for a long time. And I said, I haven't used it for a very long time. And then we talked about chivalry and about Tristan and Isolde. And then we got on to Wagner. And then he said, there are so many words one doesn't hear anymore. decent, for example. Or decency. Or finesse.
Now the daughter smiles. She smiles at how her mother describes the encounter in the train. She thinks, a shame that this woman doesn't make more of her life, hasn't made more of it. Why didn't she? It is 6:43 p.m. 6:54 p.m. Albert and Bettina are alone for a moment in the kitchen.
Someone she met on the train. She's invited someone she met on the train.
Albert, with a wine bottle and corkscrew in one hand and a packet of pills in the other. Albert feels pressure, a tension in his stomach and in his chest, pain in his head.
Someone she met on the train.
Yes.
In the living room, Corinna's big eyes, her smile.
Really? Is that really true?
Oh, yes. Anything's possible in Paraguay.
In Paraguay?
Yes.
Paraguay. Corinna loves the sound of this word. In the kitchen, Albert and Bettina.
Typical.
What?
In Albert's hand, the still unopened wine bottle and the packet of pills. He puts his reading glasses on and takes them off again.
What? What's typical?
Typical of you to apologise.
In the living room. Corinna and Rudolph chat excitedly. The child sits with them, listening with big ears. She likes this strange man.
In Paraguay.
Yes.
The sound of that word. The sound of far away. The sound of the big wide world.
But are you a Paraguayan?
No, do I look like one?
Laughter. The child asks, so what do Paraguayans look like?
They're really tiny. Like dwarves.
No.
Big child eyes.
No, Rudolph, I don't believe that.
And they've got...
Albert and Bettina in the kitchen.
What for? What did I apologise for?
I'll tell you what for. My mother invites someone here without saying a word to us, and you apologise. You've no need to apologise. And now you're pretending you don't know what I'm talking about.
Corinna, Rudolph and Marie in the living room.
Got tiny fingers, tiny eyes... and tiny feet.
Corinna acts outraged.
Well, really?
In the kitchen.
Who did I apologise to?
To him.
I'm polite.
You're a coward.
The word coward. That word wounds him. How could it not? The word hurts. He can't remember exactly when she first called him a coward. It's a word she rarely uses, but this is already the second time it's been heard today. She uses it most when her mother is here.
I'm polite.
Bettina is denigrating, his mocking echo.
Polite.
How long is he going to stay? You can't simply invite yourself.
He didn't invite himself. She invited him. You asked him in.
The tension in his chest increases.
I did what? I didn't do anything. He was in our house and he said he was a guest of your mother. And as usual, you didn't say a word.
Albert takes two tablets out of the packet and holds them in his hand.
And in a minute, you'll apologise that we've got nothing to eat in the house. I know you.
You didn't shop. You said you were going to do the shopping.
In the living room, Corinna cheerfully laughs out loud.
What a beautiful story.
On a mountain of crystal. Fruit everywhere. Blood as pure as spring water. Living for 1,000 years.
Oh.
In the kitchen.
How many different pills do you actually take in a day?
Bettina takes the information sheet for the medication out of Albert's hand and skims through it. He turns the tap on.
Did you read this about the side effects? It says here you mustn't drink alcohol if you're taking these. Who knows who he is? Who knows who you've gone and let in here?
She goes into the living room. The producer had said... cinema is about the end of the world. Cinema is about saving the world. Albert is left standing alone in the kitchen. The water is still running. He turns the tap off. He pours himself a glass of wine and swallows the pills. He looks at the magnets on the fridge door. Marie, his daughter, has made a sentence out of them. The fire falls softly. The snow is blue. Almost a haiku, he thinks. He takes his glasses off. A moment of exhaustion. His eyesight gets worse and worse, especially in winter. He puts a couple of the magnet words together next to Marie's sentences. He writes, "The night is going blind." 7:15 p.m. Rudolf at the piano. He is playing Chopin's Nocturne No. 2 in E-flat major. He plays very, very well. The music, the faces, the large oil painting, the living room, the books, Albert, Bettina, Corinna and Rudolf with full wine glasses. The child, Marie, listens and plays with her toothbrush on a string. She sits at her mother's feet. Corinna is rapt. The child is amazed. Bettina thinks this would be good music for a film. This would be wonderful music for the beginning of a film. A woman and a man in a studio. Large windows, rain, paint, brushes, canvases, half-finished pictures, mess. He is wearing overalls. She is wearing an elegant suit. The man is smiling and holding something behind his back. She looks at him smiling. Rudolf keeps playing. Chopin. Bettina, lost in thought, runs her fingers through her hair. For a moment, Albert has the feeling that he can't breathe. He wants to leave the room. Rudolf plays the final bars of the piece, then closes the lid of the piano reverentially. The piano is a valuable heirloom, a Grotrian. Albert's father used to play this piano. Corinna claps with delight and tries to make eye contact with her daughter.
How beautiful! Bravo!
In the kitchen, sometime later.
But this man's driving me mad.
Yes, but my mother likes him.
Talks intolerable rubbish.
Back in the living room, just as Rudolf finishes playing.
How beautiful! Bravo!
It's been ages since
He pauses. A moment of silence follows. Bettina knows that Albert hates moments like this. He hates any form of small talk, but he can't help himself. He feels he has to say something. He takes a gulp of red wine, and before he's swallowed it properly...
So, you met on a train?
Yes, today the train got stuck. It literally did get stuck.
Bettina decides to say nothing. An ancient, almost lifelong anger rises within her. She has the feeling of being an intruder in her own living room, intruding on her mother, just like she's felt all her life that she's been intruding on her mother.
I'm afraid we don't have very much food in the house. We didn't realise.
The look on Bettina's face. Bettina laughs, bitter and amused. It's at moments like this when Albert hates his wife. She's laughing because she despises him, because she hates him for something she used to love him for. His softness, which she now calls cowardice.
Oh, play some more.
Rudolf smiles, rather embarrassed. He starts another piece, a piece by Johann Sebastian Bach, the Fugue No. 17 in A-flat major from the Well-Tempered Clavier, Book 1, BWV 862. But then he doesn't play any further. Instead, he says...
If the universe is nothing but chaos, then how can music exist? If the universe were nothing more than a coincidence, nothing but disorder, music would not exist. But it does exist, and that is proof that there is perfection.
He starts the Bach fugue again.
Listen, listen. That is perfection. Music is order. How wonderful music is. Order. The world order.
In the kitchen, sometime later. Bettina and Albert alone.
Did you hear that? Did you hear what he said about world order?
Earlier, in the living room.
Didn't you write a book about that?
Albert smiles awkwardly and says nothing.
He wrote a book about music and fascism.
Oh, yes.
Music is...
Rudolf is trying to find the right words. He plays a couple of bars again. He starts with Chopin's Nocturne.
You see, this is Chopin. Chopin was Polish. Who would have thought that?
Albert wonders, what does he mean by that? Why is he saying that?
There aren't many Polish composers.
Rudolf begins playing the Bach piece again.
And this is Bach. To say nothing of Wagner.
He plays a Wagnerian chord.
That is Wagner.
Rudolf laughs with pleasure. Downfall, the producer had said. Pain, hope and destruction. Rudolph laughs with pleasure.
But what would music be without the people who hear it? What would all this cosmic order be without the people who see it? Nothing.
Yes!
She's never thought about this.
What would chaos the universe be without the people who composed this music, who created this order, out of nothing? If I'd been a composer...
It's as if Rudolph were putting himself and his life on trial.
If. But you're not.
So what are you then?
I'm a doctor.
A doctor? Oh, there's nothing more beautiful than saving a human life. Or lots of them.
Yes, that's true.
Rudolph gets going again.
Mankind. Yes, mankind. Mankind is the highest. Mankind rules the world. All right, not everyone.
Corinna laughs. Her mouth, her eyes. An aging but still beautiful woman. Simultaneously full of joy and bitterness. A life full of compromises, full of subservience. But she has made the best of it.
Everyone has their place, don't they?
Albert smiles awkwardly.
One must know one's place, like in an orchestra. Everyone has their place. Not everyone is the composer, not everyone is the conductor. That's Latin, conduce, the leader.
Albert does not know what to say. The pressure in his stomach, the pressure in his chest. Albert knows this pressure. It could be the beginning of a seizure. No doctor has yet been able to find out where it comes from. Where are the pills he just had? The new pills? They're in the kitchen by the sink next to the fridge. He drinks some red wine. He notices that the bottle is almost empty.
What my place, for example?
Corinna smiles at the little girl.
What my place, for example? Our place, for example, is now Marie's room. Show us your room. Do you want to?
She's saying us. Bettina doesn't like her mother allowing a strange man into her daughter's room, but on the other hand, she is glad she doesn't have to look after her.
Oh, yes, I stand with my troops at the ready.
He clicks his heels together and salutes. The grandmother laughs. The child jumps up excitedly, clicks her heels together and salutes. It's around 7:30 p.m. Corinna and Rudolph leave with the little girl. The child takes the stranger's hand. Rudolph turns around and waves to Albert and Bettina. 7:45 p.m. In the bathroom, Albert alone. In his hand, the new pills. He wonders whether he can combine the old medication with the new medication, but he can't read the directions. He puts his reading glasses on. He takes his reading glasses off. He holds the new tablets up next to the old ones. The old ones are white. The new ones are blue. Music cue. Johann Sebastian Bach, Well-Tempered Clavier, Book 1, Prelude and Fugue, No. 24 in B minor, BWV 869. In the living room, Rudolph and Corinna alone. They sit next to each other at the piano. Corinna wonders whether Rudolph will try to touch her. She would like him to, but tries not to make it too obvious. She smiles. He plays the piece through to the end.
It's so lovely the way the little girl is so happy.
She likes you.
All excited.
Of course, it's Christmas tomorrow.
The bright eyes of a child, red cheeks, a healthy girl.
In the kitchen, Albert and Bettina.
Marie's thrilled. I don't know what's wrong with you.
And in the living room.
And you. Do you live alone in... Don't you have anyone to...
Corinna shakes her head.
I've been on my own for many years.
Like me.
That could be the moment for Rudolph to take her hand. But it's too early for that. Albert and Bettina in the kitchen.
Like a 17-year-old tart. And he's behaving like...
The living room.
A long, lonely time. For I don't know how many years.
A man like you with so much...
She looks at him.
A hard time. as hard as iron.
Yes, a time as hard as iron.
Bettina.
Be glad. At least we've got some peace.
Corinna.
I get the feeling I'm not wanted. I am tolerated, but I'm also humiliated. Yes, humiliated.
In the kitchen.
She's excited. A man's making advances to her. A man in the prime of life. A doctor. And my mother always wanted a doctor. Look at him. Elegant, educated, charming.
Charming? He's not charming at all. He just pretends to be, and he's not in the prime of life. He's over 100.
I think he looks 50.
Albert feels a new spasm of tension in his chest and stomach. In the living room.
Families break apart, and that makes people desperate in their loneliness. Desperate and unprotected, especially women. But men are exactly the same too, and there are so many of them out there. So many lost people, lonely people, a whole army of the lonely, the defenseless, the weak, the betrayed, who just need to join forces. Don't you think?
Albert, can I ask you something?
What? A few hours ago, I was one of them myself, in a train stuck between two stations. And then I meet you.
He takes her hand.
Gudrun. The day before Christmas and there's not a single train running. Everything is falling apart. All those people not knowing where to go. Incredible. Thank you. Thank you for everything. Where would I be now without you?
Don't you have anyone? Anyone who... Have you no children?
Me? No, no children.
Corinna plucks up her courage.
No wife waiting for you in Paraguay?
No. No wife in Paraguay.
Albert, can I ask you something?
What?
When have you ever seen my mother's eyes light up like this? Ever?
Right now, I'd probably be eating alone. In some restaurant.
Oh, that is the worst.
But that a woman like you...
Oh, I've heard that one before.
Rudolph shakes his head slowly, although he doesn't know exactly what she means.
Bettina's father left when she was still a child.
You've been through a lot.
A bit. But not that much. No reason to complain.
Corinna smiles bitterly and shakes her head at the same time. She smiles a pained smile which she has seen in the cinema, American films. The child shouts from her bedroom, Grandma! Grandma!
You see? No reason to complain.
She stands up.
I'll be right back.
Albert in the bathroom again. Another wave of spasms. Shortness of breath, sweating, stomach pains. He holds the new tablets up next to the old ones. The old ones are white. The new ones are blue. The doctor had said, one of the blue ones every day, preferably in the evening. You can take two, but no more. Sometimes they might make you a bit lightheaded. It can happen. Albert tries to phone his doctor. He puts his reading glasses on. He takes his reading glasses off. The surgery is now closed. Albert sits down on the edge of the bath. He takes one of the blue pills, he takes one of the white pills. It is 8:05 p.m. At the same time in the living room, Rudolph alone. He stands in front of the large oil painting, looking at it. He looks at it for a long time. Bettina enters the living room with a large cardboard box which she carries into the kitchen. Christmas tree decorations is written on the box in large letters. And then she remembers her conversation with the producer again. With the box in her hands, she thinks about the phrase, the end of the world.
What a picture!
Yes, it was painted by a friend of ours.
Bettina disappears into the kitchen, her back in silhouette.
It's one of his best.
Albert in the bathroom. He takes another of the blue and another of the white pills. He feels better, although he can't be feeling better because of the pills yet. His mobile phone is next to the wash basin. He checks to see if he has got a text. No, he hasn't had any texts. At the same time, in the living room.
And what's the name of this artist?
Conrad.
Conrad?
Are you interested in art?
Essentially, I'm more interested in artists, in the person behind the picture. I tend to see the person more than the picture.
He laughs.
I am a doctor, after all.
You'll get to meet him in a minute. He's going to be coming round. The man has a terrible inferiority complex.
Yes, clearly.
Bettina laughs.
I think sometimes he thinks he's a nobody. And he suffers because of it.
She wonders why she's telling him this.
Like so many.
He points at the picture.
I had suspected that. What's the painting called?
The Struggle.
My struggle?
No.
She laughs out loud.
The struggle, not my struggle.
The struggle. The man feels inferior. Perhaps he's right. Perhaps because he knows he's not happy. Perhaps because he knows he's not doing what he ought to do in his life.
Albert appears in the doorway with a red wine glass and a full bottle of red wine. It is 8:08 p.m. Rudolf continues.
Perhaps because he knows he will never be happy. Perhaps because he knows he's not a great artist.
Rudolf turns to Albert.
Not the picture, no. He, the artist, is lacking something. He is not what he wants to be, not what he could be. Only very few people understand the true nature of their task.
Their task? What task? What does this task consist of, then?
The task? What does the task consist of? Let me ask you. What does your task consist of, Albert? You know, you have understood. I can tell from one look at this bookshelf, at your books. It is our task to carry light into the darkness. Is it not?
Before Albert can answer...
We've got to put up the tree.
The tree? Oh, God. The tree! I'm talking and stopping you from... If there's any way I can make myself useful.
Corinna and the child come back into the living room in a good mood. Corinna is proud.
We've got everything planned.
What?
The child says, we're going ice skating.
When? Now?
No, not now. On her birthday, of course.
But after what happened last year?
What happened?
Let's get Christmas over with first.
Corinna, winking at Rudolf.
I hope you know how to skate.
8:12 p.m. Albert feels slightly giddy.
Where's the Christmas tree? Haven't you got a Christmas tree?
Bach. Well-tempered clavier, book one, prelude and fugue number one in C major. A couple of minutes later, two men in the street outside the building. In the darkness of the night, one of the men wipes the snow off the bonnet of a large estate car. It's a big old Volvo. The other man stands beside the car. He's not wearing the right shoes. The car's lock is frozen. The man who wiped the snow off the car, Albert, looks up at the large windows of the apartment. The child is standing upstairs by the window and waves to them. At the same time in the kitchen, Bettina and Corinna. Corinna with a glass of red wine in her hand and a cigarette.
They want to get rid of me. It's perfectly obvious. And I can't get by on the money anyway.
Corinna blows smoke in the air in irritation. The man in the street next to the frozen car shouts something up towards the window, but the child can't understand what he is saying. Wait, the other man says, the man who doesn't have the right shoes. I've got an idea. He picks a hip flask out of his jacket pocket. He laughs. To Gudrun. What a glorious woman.
And that's the worst thing. Those people are the worst, honestly, all of them. Meinrad says I'm the best.
It doesn't sound like he wants to get rid of you.
He says I'm impossible to ignore.
She laughs coarsely.
He keeps looking at my cleavage.
Bettina, amused.
Well, there is plenty of it, after all.
He says he can't resist. He thinks it's funny.
If you don't like the job, we can look for something else for you. Albert knows enough people, or you can just stop.
I've brought a child up on my own, and my pension still isn't enough. Otherwise, I wouldn't have to go in there.
If you need more money, you only have to say.
And then sit around at home all day.
Albert and Rudolf have got the boot open. Rudolf waves to the child at the window. They drag the very large Christmas tree out of the car.
How lovely to have a family.
They've got the tree out of the car. The tree is now standing next to the car. It is still snowing.
I wish you could have met my father.
Your father?
My father was an expert in these areas.
Rudolf offers Albert a swig from his hip flask. Albert shakes his head.
In which areas?
In your area. History of human experiments, dictatorship and death, human dignity, the future of the past. But the past is the past. No doubt about that, is there?
No, the past does not exist.
Oh, really?
No. It haunts us, and that makes it a part of the present.
The two men lift the tree onto their shoulders.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Albert is allergic to pine trees, especially when he touches them. He can immediately feel welts forming on his neck and his hands.
An interesting view. You think the past is never over?
Worse than that.
In the kitchen.
They'll evict me from the flat.
You've been saying that for 30 years.
In the street. The men with the Christmas tree. Albert's hands and neck are itching. Rudolf laughs.
You're perfectly right.
You've been saying that for 30 years, and it's not true.
I can't afford the flat anymore. And they put the rent up every year. They know very well I can't manage anymore.
If you wouldn't keep lying the whole time.
When have I lied?
Corinna laughs bitterly. She has another drink. The men in the snow with the Christmas tree make their way to the front door. Albert tries to carry the tree and scratch his neck at the same time. He slips. The tree almost falls on top of him.
Careful! Can you manage?
Albert scratches his neck.
Is that an allergy?
In the kitchen.
Haven't you got an ashtray?
Yes, Mother. We have got an ashtray. It's right next to you.
The men with the tree in the stairwell. The light goes off. No switch near them.
Everything all right?
They climb the stairs with the tree in the dark.
I mean, is one allowed to kill a human being? No. But sometimes it has to be done. Sometimes, perhaps, it has to be done. If it serves a higher cause.
What cause?
Jesus, for example, was killed by his own father.
In the kitchen.
How long are you staying?
I can leave.
That's not what I said.
A bitter moment in which angry memories surface on both sides. Both try to pull themselves together. Tomorrow's Christmas. Bettina's mobile phone makes a noise. Bettina reads the text and smiles.
Who's that from?
The look on her daughter's face. Albert comes rushing into the kitchen and washes his neck, face and hands.
Oh,
phew. Oh,
it itches.
Why?
The tree.
Is there anything you're not allergic to?
Red wine?
Aren't you going to eat anything today?
Yes, we just weren't expecting visitors.
How nice of you to leave me standing outside the door for so long.
I was on the phone.
Yes, you're always on the phone when I come.
8:40 p.m. In the living room. Rudolf is playing the piano. Prelude and Fugue number 16 in G minor, BWV 861. His hands glide across the keyboard. Corinna stands next to the piano, watching him. In the bathroom. Running water. Albert examines his hands and neck. There's not much to see. He leans on the wash basin. He turns the tap off. Then he phones someone. His face in the mirror. He says, "Hey." And the woman on the other end says, "Hey, Albie." He takes a short, deep breath. He says, "Don't call me Albie, please." And she says, "Why not? What don't you like about it?" His father had called him Albie, his father who killed himself when Albert was 6 years old. He says, "I don't like anything about it. How are you?" And she says, "Fine, fine,
I'm at my parents' house. We're just about to eat. My mother's had too much to drink, and now she wants us all to pray, and it's not even Christmas till tomorrow. I've got to put up the Christmas tree in a minute, he says, and I'm allergic to the thing. He laughs. She says, put rubber gloves on. You're not allergic to rubber, are you? She laughs. He laughs too, quietly. Sometime later, Albert and Rudolph, putting the Christmas tree up in the living room. Albert is wearing yellow rubber gloves. Corinna's face, looking at the gloves.
And you really are from Paraguay?
Bettina is suddenly in a better mood. Why? Much later that night, Albert and Bettina alone.
You know what kind of people live in Paraguay?
No idea.
Paraguayans?
Yes, but he's not a Paraguayan.
In the living room, putting up the tree.
And you really are from Paraguay?
Just hold it still.
I was born there, but as you can see, I'm not a Paraguayan. My ancestors emigrated.
Your ancestors?
Yes.
Rudolph knows what the other man is thinking.
How unusual.
Rudolph laughs.
But we always had a Christmas tree.
A little earlier, in the bathroom, the voice on the phone, after a brief pause. Thanks for the money, she says, but I don't want any money from you. It's your Christmas money. Not very romantic, don't you think? No, no, don't say that. The woman Albert is talking to on the phone has been working for him at the publishers for 4 months. Naomi. And it quickly became clear that he and Naomi... Albert's face in the mirror. In the living room. Sometime later. Albert with the rubber gloves. The two men putting up the tree. Albert tries not to touch the tree. He particularly tries to avoid the branches touching his face, which is almost impossible. Bettina gives instructions. Which side of the tree should face the front?
Left. Your left. No, to the left, not the right.
The voice on the phone. How's your wife? I don't know. Let's not talk about my wife. No? Why not, Albie? Silence. I'm going to be going out later, she says. Where? With a couple of friends. Uh-huh. Yes, we'll have a few drinks and see. Okay, well, take care. What do you mean by that? Just, are you afraid I might do something? Yeah. Where are you going? I could drop by. You? I think we're better off keeping that separate. Do I embarrass you? Too old? You're old, but that doesn't bother me. Really. He says nothing. She says, what about you? Does your wife give you a Christmas fuck? I keep imagining you doing it with her. Is she any good?
Tell it.
Not that way! No!
The men turn the tree. Bettina provides instructions. Albert disagrees. Corinna disagrees with Albert. Albert says something and scratches his face. Bettina disagrees. Corinna laughs at Albert's suggestion and shakes her head. She says he doesn't know the difference between left and right.
Well, yes, well, Paraguay. It's just a country like any other. Though I must admit, I didn't choose it. My father...
The tree slowly falls over. Slow motion. Everyone laughs apart from Albert, who is stressed. A few minutes earlier, in the bathroom, Albert's face in the mirror. He is on the phone. What about you? Does your wife give you a Christmas fuck? I keep imagining you doing it with her. Is she any good? He says, oh God, don't say things like that. I miss you. I miss you too, Albie, says the voice at the other end. She's crying, he thinks. And she says, how's your daughter, Albie? Sorry, I'm not supposed to say Albie. What does your daughter call you? Does she call you daddy? I'd like a daddy like you. Marie, Albert's daughter, in the kitchen. The girl's hands putting a plate on the table. The glasses. Albert takes off his rubber gloves. Rudolph and Albert and Corinna and Bettina and Marie lay the table in the kitchen for supper. A couple of minutes earlier, in the bathroom, Albert says, I think your dad's a bit older than me. Maybe. Not much. The fridge opens and closes. Hands. The child's hands. The father's hands. The mother's. The grandmother's hands with the large rings Bettina hates so much. Plates. The table is laid. Glasses, wine, water, cheese, cold meat, fish, bread, butter.
How beautiful it sounds. Paraguay. I never got away from here.
Where did you want to go? Paraguay? Home was like Paraguay for us.
What do you mean by that?
In the bathroom. The woman on the phone says, "You're a good man, Albert, but don't give me money. I'm sorry." "That's okay. Thank you." In the kitchen. It is 9:10 p.m. The doorbell. Bettina looks at the clock.
That's Comrade.
I'll get it.
No, I'm on my way.
Bettina goes to the front door, closing the kitchen door behind her. Albert watches her. Bettina in the entrance hall by the door to the apartment. She smooths out her blouse. She opens the door. In front of her stands Conrad, the painter who painted the large picture which is hanging in the living room. Conrad and Albert have been friends since they were children. "Hey." She says this, "hey," smiling and serious. Bettina visited Conrad in his studio a couple of days ago. It was an afternoon of very few words. He told her that he was in love with her. He had been for a very long time, and she said nothing. She just looked at him. "Hey," he answers, her husband's friend for so many years. The light in the doorway goes out. He stands in front of her on the stairs in the dark. A yellow strip of light spills out of the apartment onto the red carpet running up the steps of the old stairway. Conrad is unshaven. He is wearing the overalls he usually wears for painting. She can see traces of oil paint on his hands. She smiles. She says, "You look really Christmassy." He says, "I know." He's hiding something behind his back, and now he reveals the present. It is a paintbrush. He holds it like a bunch of flowers. She laughs out loud. "What's that?" "It's a present. For you." "Thank you." "It's a paintbrush. I can see that." Now something happens that she hadn't planned. She pushes him into the darkness of the doorway and kisses him. It is the first time they have kissed. He is just as surprised as she is. After a moment, they pull away from each other. She says, "Thank you. What a beautiful present." Everyone around the table in the kitchen dining room. Laughter. Albert, Bettina, Corinna, Rudolph, the child, Conrad. It is 9:17 p.m.
And I said, if no one comes to rescue us, we'll have to continue the journey on foot.
Corinna laughs, almost snorting.
On foot, in the snow.
Still, it was very beautiful. The two of us, alone in the train compartment and outside the blue light of dusk, the snow. I love the north. Gudrun.
Corinna. She's called Corinna.
But Gudrun, it's such a beautiful name, almost a sacred name.
Gudrun?
Gudrun means battle and magic, so it means the magician of battle in Old High German. Or in Swedish, it means she who knows the secret of the gods. Isn't that beautiful? These old names, they are the legacy of our ancestors, and we must preserve that legacy. Gudrun had wrapped herself up in my coat. It was getting dark and icy patterns were forming on the windows of the train compartment. She looked like a queen.
Corinna is happy. She is beaming. Rudolph smiles.
Gudrun told me that you're currently writing about
Christmas in Auschwitz. That's what his next book's supposed to be called. Well, well, what a subject. How can you spend all day?
Bettina has heard this before. Her mother never talks about the films Bettina makes, but she likes talking about Albert's work in terms which are both admiring and derogatory at the same time.
And you?
Bettina's foot momentarily touches Conrad's leg under the table.
Me.
What do you do?
I paint.
You paint? Mm. Yes, of course. You're the You're the painter.
Yes.
We've talked about you, Bettina and I.
Oh, yes.
Of course. Your picture's impossible to ignore.
Rudolf laughs. Conrad is uncertain. Bettina smiles at him. Albert notices her look. Something irritates him, but he doesn't know what. He briefly feels a little dizzy again. Sometime later, in the living room, Bettina and Albert alone for a moment.
Look. Conrad gave us a present.
She shows him the paintbrush.
Aha!
Were you talking to someone on the phone before, when you were in the bathroom?
Yes, the publishers. Why?
Nice, isn't it?
It's a paintbrush.
Exactly.
In the kitchen.
And what do you paint?
Frictions.
Frictions? Mm.
Corinna's made-up mouth. She laughs in a silly, knowing way. Conrad is disconcerted.
Frictions. Oppositions. Tensions. Everything and nothing. Wanting and not being able to. Not being allowed.
He drinks tragically. The glass in his hand. The glass at his mouth.
Mm. How can I explain it? What do you do for a living?
He's a doctor.
You paint abstracts.
No.
But that painting in the living room is an abstract.
No, it would be an abstract if it abstracted
Excuse
something.
Excuse me for interrupting you, Conrad. May I call you Conrad? May I ask you something?
Of course.
What do you want?
Albert laughs. Bettina touches Conrad's hand briefly, as if by accident.
What do I want?
I think that's something every artist asks himself. What do you want from art?
I want to paint.
Yes, of course, that's your talent. But what else do you want?
Well, the things that I want aren't things you can go looking for. You can only...
Sometime later, Albert and Bettina alone for a moment in the living room. Bettina with the paintbrush in her hand.
He's drunk my red wine for 25 years and now he gives us a paintbrush.
He did give us a picture as well.
Oh, thank God this time it's only a paintbrush. If it was a picture, we'd have to hang it up.
She hugs him.
Bad mood.
Me?
You're in a bad mood.
No. But your mother...
Jealous?
Of your mother?
Of the paintbrush.
Albert looks at her. Why did she say that?
No.
Yes, you are.
A paintbrush is a paintbrush. It's what you do with it that counts.
Flashback. A few days earlier. Conrad and Albert in Albert's study. More bookshelves. A large desk. Outside it is dark. The desk lamp is the only light. Albert and Conrad are drinking cognac. Albert is looking for something.
A paintbrush is a paintbrush. It's what you do with it that counts. Being able to produce, you know? Production. Working. The work is sacred.
Albert has found what he was looking for. A bundle of banknotes, which he gives to Conrad. It's not the first time he's lent Conrad money.
Just at the beginning of the month, thanks.
The work is sacred. More sacred than friendship, more sacred than alcohol.
More.
The horror of being alone in front of a canvas.
The horror of being alone. Mm-hmm.
Albert smiles and drinks cognac.
The loneliness, which seems to swallow you up. Desire. The night. What's unsaid? What can't be said? The secrets.
Conrad holds his cognac glass up to the light from the desk lamp. The large windows. The snow outside. Albert has heard all this before.
The secrets.
Yes.
Conrad pours himself more cognac. Albert thinks Conrad is drinking too fast, that he'd probably already been drinking before he arrived. Once he's reached a certain level of drunkenness, Conrad has been saying the same thing for years. He talks mainly about himself. Conrad always wanted to paint, and Albert always wanted to write. Both of them have managed to achieve what they always wanted to do with their lives, but Conrad still isn't happy with what he is doing. And he doesn't earn any money.
Secrets are freedom, aren't they?
He looks Albert in the eye.
What can a painting do? A paintbrush is just a paintbrush. A painting can't do anything.
Bitter.
Nothing. Oh, I should pack it in. But there's nothing else I can do.
Conrad drinks again.
Nothing's worse than self-pity. If I could write, if I could find the words for the truth. You're looking for the truth. You always were. And you haven't got a clue what the truth is, but still, you're looking for it. That's the difference.
The night before Christmas. Bettina in the bathroom. She looks at herself briefly in the bathroom mirror. She is pleased with the paintbrush. A film in black and white. Rain on the large windows of a studio. Pictures, paints, papers, canvases, sketches, paintbrushes, mess. Scattered across the floor, hastily removed clothes, a woman's elegant suit, stockings, a set of overalls. Flashback. In the study, the light of the desk lamp.
And you haven't got a clue what the truth is, but still, you're looking for it. That's the difference. I was born in the wrong time. Art is nothing. Art is dead. It's killed itself off.
The night before Christmas. Rudolph and Corinna in the kitchen. Corinna's eyes are gleaming. She laughs animatedly.
This man,
she means Conrad.
This man talks nothing but rubbish. Always has done.
In the kitchen, later. Everyone is having supper. Rudolph describes the beginning of an opera which he would have liked to have composed, if only he could compose.
Very quietly. Very, very quietly.
Very quietly. He's almost whispering.
Music. The violins, a high note, a fluttering. You know how violins sound.
He plays an invisible violin and sings to imitate the sound of a violin. Everyone is amazed.
Then the cellos.
He sings a slowly rising cello phrase, three or four notes, no more.
Do, 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 do. A measured tempo, not too loud, not too loud. The cello theme is repeated. Do, 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 do. A rising series of notes, almost like a slow march. One can sense it's before dawn.
Rudolph takes a breath. He pauses for a moment, full of reverence, and looks around the group.
Before dawn. Now, the double basses. Reminding us of the dark night. The night crescendo, the double basses. Reminding us of bad dreams, of everything one would rather forget. The cigarettes and the wine and then the bad dreams. But now the cellos again. The violas and the violins. Now the night is over. Sunrise.
He repeats the phrases of the string instruments.
Now the night is over. The brass enters. First the horns still restrained, then the trumpets. Ba-bam, 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 ba-bam.
Becoming louder.
Sun, light, trumpets, trumpets, sun, light. A high mountain wind at sunrise, a cloudless day, icy, clear, and on the peaks, snow.
Bettina and Albert a moment later alone in the entrance hall. She giggles happily.
He's mad.
He's not mad, he's dangerous.
Bettina, suddenly humorless.
You think everyone's dangerous?
In the kitchen, a little earlier, Rudolph continues.
What a day! So cold and clear and bright. A few bars of solo violin, and one can hear the sound of the mountain stream.
He imitates the sound of the mountain stream.
And one can see, or one would be able to see, front left, almost leaning against the sheer rock face, a modest inn, or a hut, a modest farmhouse. The morning sun on the mountains, which were already there before the first human being walked the earth, and which will still be there once the last human being has passed. A wanderer on the narrow mountain path on the edge of the abyss. A lonely wanderer in the early hours. Who knows, perhaps he was travelling all night in the darkness. Where has he come from? What is he carrying?
bundle, a box. But the mountains are feared for sudden changes in the weather. At present, the sky is still cloudless, and suddenly a storm comes. Now there would be drums. Drums.
Rudolph drums on the table. To the child.
And drum too. And you, Corinna, the violins.
Rudolph sings the voice of the violins. Corinna sings the voice of the violins back, rather hoarsely.
Bettina, the violins. Conrad, the double basses. The cellos. The violins at high tempo. At the tempo of the wall of cloud racing onwards. What had just been a bright sky darkens. A storm approaches. Icy cold. Snow and ice.
Bettina and Albert alone. Later.
Something's not right about him.
In the kitchen.
Icy cold, snow and ice. Shh. The threat of death. Trombones. Horns. And with the last of his strength, the lonely wanderer reaches the shelter. The wanderer has to reach the shelter. One can see it, don't forget, front left, almost leaning on the sheer rock face, the modest hut, the sanctuary of an inn. The wanderer collapses outside the doorway, which is his salvation. And then a woman comes rushing out of the door. One can see her blonde hair, her dress in the wind.
I thought it was cold.
And here the melody of a folk song wafts in out of nothing. Possibly a flute.
The child asks, and then? And then?
And the brass again. Ba 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 ba! The violins in the storm. The basses. Conrad.
Conrad sings.
Corinna.
Corinna quickly drinks some wine and sings.
Beautiful!
The little girl is thrilled. Rudolph breaks off in the middle and shouts joyously.
Children! Children, let us celebrate!
The child is surprised by the man shouting, children, but she also thinks it's funny. It is an unusual expression in her family. Sometimes her father says, comrades, and sometimes he says, brothers and sisters. And she now understands that this is a joke because she doesn't have any brothers or sisters.
Let's celebrate!
Yes! What are we celebrating?
Well, strictly speaking, Christmas isn't until tomorrow.
Well, for me...
Never mind! Let's celebrate the solstice.
Oh, the solstice. Yes.
According to the calendar...
The calendar.
According to the calendar, the solstice...
One has to celebrate festivals as they fall, and when a new, better time is dawning, the exact day doesn't matter. Let's not tyrannise ourselves with punctuality. The solstice.
The child asks, so when is the solstice? And Albert thinks, I explained that to her a couple of days ago. She knows that.
The solstice is an ancient, sacred festival.
Sometime later, Bettina and Albert alone for a moment by the bookshelves.
These Nordic gods, the solstice, it's all... In the summer, the night of the solstice marks the longest day, and afterwards the days get shorter again. But in winter, now, in December... The solstice means that the days will get longer again, longer and longer, until those glorious northern nights when it never gets truly dark.
Rudolph takes a drink. The red wine is delicious. A wine from the Languedoc.
To summer. To light. To the long northern days. To Odin.
I tried to paint Midsummer Night once.
The white nights.
And?
Oh, how can you capture that primordial light?
Rudolph makes an odd face. Primordial light reminds him of Gustav Mahler, and Rudolph hates Gustav Mahler.
Primordial light.
Bettina starts taking the Christmas tree decorations out of the box and putting them on the table.
What are you doing?
I'm picking out the decorations for the Christmas tree.
Now?
Yes, now. Why not?
Am I disturbing anyone?
How inhospitable. We have a visitor and we're celebrating the solstice.
Her eyes fall on the expensive Christmas tree decorations, on the old candle holders and the real wax candles which Bettina is taking out of the box, all wrapped in beautiful, expensive, soft paper.
Oh, well, well.
What?
Well, real candles? Nobody does that anymore. Nobody. I think it's actually banned.
Bettina strokes the head of her daughter, who is looking with great big eyes at the antique Christmas tree decorations she has bought recently. Mother and daughter. A beautiful image.
We do it properly.
Later. Possibly days later. Possibly in a car. It has started to thaw. Rain. Possibly outside the station. Corinna Bitter, alone with Albert.
She wasn't always like this. I remember when she was a child, she didn't confront me then. She didn't stab me in the back in front of everyone.
Albert has heard this many times. He can smell the breath of the woman who is his wife's mother.
What does she do all day? She buys antique Christmas tree decorations. She buys wax candles. It's none of my business, but she's throwing money away. She throws money away.
In the kitchen.
We do it properly.
Hmm? What do you mean, properly? As if what I'd done in the past was wrong. I did what I could. And I didn't have a husband with the bank account to match. I had to work. I didn't have time. I couldn't make any boring films nobody wants to watch.
Albert and Bettina alone, 4 minutes later.
It won't be long now before the old bag's sticking her tongue down his throat.
Bettina is in tears.
And you don't defend me.
How am I supposed to defend you?
She respects you because you're the one who opens the wine bottles. But as soon as you turn your back on her, she'll bite. It happens every time.
In the kitchen.
I did what I could. And I didn't have a husband with the bank account to match. I had to work. I didn't have time. I couldn't make any boring films nobody wants to watch.
At this moment, within this brief moment, Corinna becomes aware of several things. That she has wounded her daughter deeply. That she loves her daughter. And that she hates her because she hates her own life. She would like to take hold of Bettina's hand. Bettina is missing a new Christmas tree bauble, a valuable, mouth-blown one, which she only bought this morning and had put inside the box. This bauble isn't there.
Did you drop something earlier in the entrance hall?
Me? When? No. Why?
A woman in her mid-60s who secretly looks inside a box in an entrance hall, who secretly takes something out of that box which does not belong to her, and has nothing to do with her. She takes something out of the box which then slips out of her hands. A glass bauble shattering into 1,000 pieces. Slow motion. The woman on her knees in the entrance hall nervously and secretly picking up the pieces with her hands. She looks for a bin. In the kitchen. Rudolph turns to the child, who is playing with her toothbrush horse while she is eating.
And what do you want for Christmas?
The child says, I'd like a grandfather.
Oh!
She's been saying that since she was 3. Sometimes she just wants a dog.
And then the child starts crying because she doesn't have a grandfather.
We could pretend that I'm your grandfather.
Albert and Bettina alone, sometime later.
We've got to do something.
But what?
This man has got to go.
Throw him out.
I can't throw him out.
You said he's got to go, so go on then. Throw him out. Get on with it.
Albert looks at Bettina for a long time. He remembers an afternoon 10 years ago in France on the Atlantic coast. Summer. The sun is already low, the waves as high as houses. The red flag is flying, and now, after work, the lifeguards are out swimming with their surfboards, their heads and arms on the peaks of those glittering mountains of water. Nothing can harm those men. In the kitchen. Bettina tells the child, time for bed. The child shouts,
No, her mother says, yes it is, Daddy will read to you. The child, no. Rudolph says, young lady, tomorrow is going to be an exciting day. Her mother says, clean your teeth and off to bed. In the child's bedroom, a lamp which projects stars onto the ceiling in the darkness. Marie has a beautiful large room. Her father puts his daughter to bed. He lies down next to her on top of the bed. She snuggles up to him. Both watch the snow falling outside the window. Both breathe easily. The doorbell rings. The child wants to jump up. Her father says, stay here. The daughter asks her father, who is it? Bettina shouts from the entrance hall, I'll get it. It is just after 10. Outside the door stands a young woman. Hello, the young woman says to Bettina. Bettina has seen the young woman once before at her husband's publisher's. Hello. The young woman says, I'd like to talk to Albert. In the child's bedroom. The child in bed. Her father lies next to her. He has taken off his shoes. The daughter asks, Daddy, can God see through clouds? He says, yes. At the door to the flat, Bettina and the young woman. The young woman says, I'd like to talk to Albert. Bettina says, He's just putting our daughter to bed. She shrugs her shoulders. She does not invite the young woman in. Yes, I know, it's late, says the young woman. Her eyeliner has run. She has been crying. I didn't want to disturb you. Could you give him something for me? Yes, of course. In the child's bedroom. And does God sleep at night? No. Does he ever sleep? I don't know. Because he's got to sleep. Do you think so? Don't you? I think he sleeps sometimes. In winter, the girl says. In winter? And what happens while he's asleep? Then people are alone. Yes, her father thinks. People are alone. At the same time at the front door. The young woman says, We work together and I forgot to give him this. Bettina says, I know. I know who you are. I saw you recently at the publisher's. Well then, the young woman gives Bettina an envelope. Here. Thanks. Merry Christmas. Bettina says, you too. The woman says, thanks. Bettina says, don't mention it. In the child's bedroom, the child has fallen asleep. Albert stays there for a few minutes, lying beside the little girl in the dark. The stars on the ceiling. The restful breathing of the child at his side. 10:15 p.m. For a moment, everything is fine, just the way it is. In the kitchen, Corinna and Rudolph and Conrad.
And all that goes unrecognized. Old people are starving. Who's going to look after me?
Bettina comes back into the kitchen. Corinna feels she has been caught out.
Certainly not you. At the end of the month, there's nothing left.
Nice dress.
Yes, isn't it? That's what I said.
Corinna knows what this intervention from her daughter implies. She knows that it is not a compliment. She knows that her daughter is trying to say that she is not telling the truth.
It's second hand.
Corinna lights a cigarette.
New, but second hand. It was less than half price. Less than a third.
You don't need to justify yourself.
Bettina lights a cigarette. Corinna stands up, tense, and starts clearing up.
Are you smoking again?
Hardly ever.
Conrad laughs out loud. He takes Albert's reading glasses, which have been left lying on the kitchen table, puts them on and takes them off again. 10:27 p.m. Just before Albert is about to fall asleep himself, he has an idea for his new book, Christmas in Auschwitz.
Albert stands up carefully. He looks out of the window of the child's bedroom. He sees the perfect blanket of snow in the light of the street lamps. He remembers how magical nights like this were when he was a child. For a moment, he thinks he can see Naomi in the snow down in front of the building. She is standing in the street looking up at the window, but then suddenly she's gone. Nobody there. He must have been mistaken.
Give me one of those.
You're already smoking.
Rudolph laughs.
It's true.
My feet still hurt from the cold.
Was it that cold in the train?
Freezing. And I was in these shoes. I had the wrong shoes on. Who expects something like that to happen?
Mother, please leave everything where it is. We're still eating. Just sit down.
Bettina knows what her mother is like when she's nervous, when she feels attacked, when it comes out that she has lied, like just now, about the dress, which of course she didn't buy second hand. Bettina knows, or can predict with almost absolute certainty, that her mother is going to break something in the next 5 minutes. Albert picks up his shoes and slips out of the child's bedroom. In the kitchen, Corinna continues clearing up.
Mother, please leave everything where it is. We're still eating. Just sit down.
No, no, it's all right.
Corinna wants to tidy the kitchen. She doesn't want to sit down, but does it for her daughter's sake, though only half does it. She half sits down on the kitchen table. A crack. Something breaks. Albert slips out of the child's bedroom and gently closes the door. He walks down the corridor with his shoes in his hand. Then he steps on a piece of broken glass. It is 10:30 p.m. Flashback. It is 6:20 p.m.
What was that?
No answer.
What was that?
A crack. Something smashes. Back in the kitchen.
Oh, oh, oh no.
What's happened?
I didn't mean to. I really didn't mean to do that.
What is it?
Corinna has sat on Albert's reading glasses, which were lying on the kitchen table.
Never mind.
But I'm really so very...
Blood. Blood on the floor in the entrance hall. Blood on the floor in the bathroom. Albert's foot is bleeding. Albert in the bathroom, his bleeding foot on the edge of the bath. Albert looks for a plaster and finds one. His phone rings on silent. Before he can answer it, Bettina comes into the bathroom.
My mother's just sat on your reading glasses.
What?
She sat on your glasses.
But how am I supposed...
It slowly becomes clear to him what this means.
How am I going to...
It just happened.
Well, how can that just happen?
It just did.
But without any glasses, I can't...
Sometime later in the living room. Corinna, Rudolph and Conrad on the sofa and comfy chairs. Bettina starts decorating the Christmas tree. Albert limps into the room and sits down in a chair.
I am so very sorry, really.
Albert is slightly dazed.
Oh, you don't have to apologise.
But you have to be able to read.
In 3 days, when the shops are open again,
I don't know. It's best if I leave.
No, no, that's not going to change anything.
Or you could try my reading glasses for the time being. Well, then I won't be able to read anything. But in my case, that's not so important. Here, please, take mine.
Or you can take mine. I've got some too.
No. No.
A little earlier, in the bathroom, Bettina sees Albert's bleeding foot with the plaster, but says nothing. Instead, she gives Albert the envelope.
Here.
What's that?
Someone left it for you.
What? When?
Just now.
Who?
A young woman. From the publishers.
Oh, yes.
Bettina looks at him quickly and goes back into the kitchen. Albert stays alone in the bathroom. He opens the envelope. It contains some banknotes and a letter. He tries to read the letter, but he can't read it without his reading glasses. Music. 10:50 p.m. in the living room. Bettina decorating the Christmas tree. Conrad helping her. Rudolph and Corinna are drinking red wine. Conrad is also drinking red wine, although he's decorating the Christmas tree at the same time. Albert does not know what to do. He would like to read the letter, but he can't without reading glasses. 10:55 p.m. Rudolph at the piano. Bach, Prelude No. 16 in G minor from the Well-Tempered Clavier, Book 1. 11 p.m.
There just aren't any Jewish composers. Well, I can't think of any. Strictly speaking, there aren't even any Catholic composers worth taking seriously.
Mendelssohn? Mahler? Weill?
Oh, and what about Mozart?
Suddenly, his heart is racing again. He's sweating. He has an attack of dizziness. Albert looks at his watch. 11:03 p.m. 10 minutes later, 11:13 p.m. The Christmas tree looks more and more beautiful.
I would have liked to have been something else. I would have liked to have learnt an instrument. I would have liked to go to university, like my daughter, like you. But, you know, in our family, that wasn't to be taken for granted. My father. Oh, they were different times.
But you are something.
Oh, yes.
No! You're something wonderful.
Yes?
You're a mother. You are a grandmother. You have achieved a lot. You've brought a healthy daughter into the world, and that daughter has brought a healthy child into the world who's as quick as lightning. You've made your contribution. And that must be recognised. Must it not?
Rudolph looks around the group. 11:16 p.m.
That must be recognised, and a society which does not recognise this is...
He pauses. Rudolph takes Corinna's hand. A look from mother to daughter.
You can be proud. No, you must be proud.
Proud? That's another of those words which is completely out of fashion. Proud and chivalry and decency.
It is 11:20 p.m. Rudolph discovers Bettina's films lying on the occasional table.
Are these your films? How interesting.
Oh, yes, they're some of my films.
Rudolph's eyes fall on Conrad's paintbrush, lying next to her films on the table. Bettina would like to carry on talking about her films.
And that. How beautiful.
What?
Those are my...
Oh, look.
Yes.
Look.
He holds up the paintbrush.
How beautiful.
Conrad's face. He is beaming. His hungover, unshaven face is suddenly beaming. His tired eyes have changed. He does not know what is coming, but he has the feeling that something special is about to happen, that he is on the verge of a special moment in his life, of a turning point. Rudolph takes his time.
How beautiful, isn't it?
Corinna does not understand what he means, but she says, yes.
Yes.
This yes resonates with fascination, devotion, enthusiasm, and amazement.
What do you see?
Corinna wants to say something, but she does not know what, so she just says, Well.
Well.
What do you see?
Well, I see a paintbrush.
A paintbrush. But with this, one can not only paint a picture. Your friend Conrad knows what I'm talking about. With this...
Rudolph keeps holding up the paintbrush.
With this, one can create a world.
11:25 p.m.
A new world which will endure forever. A painting is closer to people than a photograph, which is nothing but the reproduction or the deformation of the present. But a painting, is this not right, Conrad? Do correct me on this. A painting opens hearts and it opens eyes, if it is truly art. Because this here...
He continues to hold up the paintbrush.
This here... is a torch.
Bettina laughs and continues to decorate the tree. 30 minutes later. Just before midnight.
I think we have to be prepared to question everything. Everything.
Ooh.
Yes, but what does that mean?
Everything is exploding. We're drifting further and further apart, and no one can find the way back. We have to find the way to a place where the community is still a community. The path to unity. We need new thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Completely new. We have to start playing the music of the cosmos once again. Let's join together. Come together in one big sound. Together. We are strong.
Rudolf lays his hand on Conrad's shoulder.
And it is the torch which leads us, which brings light into the darkness.
Corinna applauds. 12:05 a.m. Albert and Bettina briefly alone in the kitchen.
The things he's saying.
At least he's not boring.
12:08 a.m. in the living room. Conrad, Rudolf, Bettina, Corinna and Albert.
We are called upon to make the world richer, brighter. Art in particular.
Excuse me, a painting is a painting and not a candle.
Torch!
No. Questioning the relevance of art is justified.
But who gets to say what's relevant and what isn't?
Individualism is no more than hollow euphoria.
Only because you've drunk too much.
We hide away in our pain and our desires and we end up crawling around on Earth in the dark. When we could be flying.
The truth is radiant. Mm.
I don't think the truth is radiant at all. There is no truth.
Of course there's truth.
Truth. Life, death, the sun, those are truths.
And do you know how far away the sun is from us?
And that makes the struggle so much more important. The struggle.
The truth of chivalrous battle.
Rudolf places his hand on his girlfriend's hand.
The struggle.
The struggle. The struggle. The idea.
The idea? The idea of what?
Rudolf laughs.
The idea of beauty.
Albert feels for the pills in his trouser pocket and takes one of them, which he swallows with a gulp of red wine. It is one of the white ones. Bettina has been watching her husband. She knows what reaching into his trouser pocket for pills means. 12:12 a.m.
Is everything all right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Albert heads into the bathroom. He opens the mirrored cabinet. He takes some pills out of the cabinet. These pills are green. He closes the mirrored cabinet again. His eyes are suddenly transfixed.
How did you find me?
What do you mean, find? She invited me.
I thought they'd hanged you.
Hanged? Me? Why?
Because you.
Rudolf laughs.
No.
But you're the butcher.
The butcher? What kind of butcher?
Corinna kisses Rudolf.
Just don't listen.
You are the butcher.
The doctor? Not the butcher.
Bettina is there. Albert says to Bettina,
I thought he was dead. And what have I got to do with him? What can I do about it? That man is a monster.
Albert whispers,
that man is a monster. We've got to kill him.
You're up to something. I can see that about you. You're not going to destroy my future. You've destroyed enough already.
I thought you were dead. You've been dead for years.
Rudolf makes a good-natured snapping sound with his tongue.
Dead? Well,
Rudolf laughs.
I'd say I'm not quite dead. Not quite. The old are tougher than many people think. I was afraid you were going to leave me standing in the hallway. Merry Christmas.
Sometime later, in the living room, Albert returns.
There you are.
Rudolf drinks some wine. Bettina has almost finished decorating the tree, but keeps changing small details. The antique Christmas tree decorations. Things she has made herself. The candles. Albert is rather woozy, but tries not to show it.
The idea of beauty serves mankind, does it not? Is that not right? The idea of beauty serves mankind.
He drinks some more wine.
So someone who does not serve that idea is not serving mankind either, is he?
Albert drinks some wine which goes down the wrong way.
And anyone who does not serve mankind betrays the species, and anyone who betrays the species does not deserve to be part of that species.
Albert drinks some wine which goes down the wrong way, coughs but tries to suppress the cough.
Anyone who betrays the species is not human. He might be human in a biological sense, perhaps, but in actual fact, he is no longer part of mankind.
Bettina decorating the tree.
He is something similar to a human, a body, an organism, an animal, and yes, humans have the right to kill that animal, just as that animal kills humans. And that is the struggle.
No.
Rudolph taken aback. Bettina stops what she's doing.
No.
Mankind does not have the right.
Young man.
Mankind does not have the right. It is its duty. It is its duty.
12:24 a.m. Conrad gets up and goes into the kitchen. He seems to open a drawer there and be looking for something. He returns with a large knife.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
Don't you know? You must see. This is long overdue.
Holding the knife, Conrad goes up to the large oil painting and slashes it to pieces.
Conrad! This is not art. This is not the art we will take with us into the future. No!
He continues to destroy the picture which he himself painted.
Hey!
Bettina lays her hand on Conrad's hand holding the knife.
Conrad.
Conrad kisses Bettina on the mouth.
What's going on now?
It was time.
Well, watch you don't hurt yourself.
Let's put everything behind us.
All that is merely the illustration of an aimless search. But now...
Conrad lays special emphasis on these words.
From now on...
Conrad.
He stops. He can see a large new picture with his inner eye.
A pity about that canvas. I think I lent you the money for that canvas.
In the picture in Conrad's head, people joining together, moving towards the horizon. Bettina says quietly...
What are you doing? Have you had too much to drink?
Conrad looks at her for a long time. He takes her hand.
No. Too little.
I think you've had too much.
Chopin, Nocturne. It snows and snows in the night beyond the large windows of this old apartment. Corinna, laughing, shakes her head. Rudolph puts his arm around her shoulders. Conrad gesticulates to explain something, his eyes shining. Bettina carries on decorating the tree. The large oil painting hanging in tatters on the wall. Albert rubs his eyes, the pills in his hands. Rudolph opens his suitcase and takes out a white plastic bag. In the bag, a bottle. Bettina climbs onto a chair next to the tree. Rudolph takes the cork out of the bottle. Corinna fetches some small glasses. Bettina places the evening star on top of the Christmas tree. She almost falls off her chair, but Conrad catches her. Rudolph pours a clear liquid into the small glasses. He says something, but music covers the scene. He holds a glass and the bottle in his hand. Conrad, with the knife. The music stops.
I brought something with me, something special. Albert, Bettina, Gudrun.
Rudolph raises the bottle in the air. He pauses for a long time.
Whoever drinks this water will live forever.
Well,
no, not quite. But still, whoever drinks this water will live for 1,000 years.
1,000 years?
Is that all?
Corinna looks at the glass in fascination.
You don't have to believe it, but it would be nice if we had something we could believe in.
Belief? Well, if it's belief we're talking about...
Belief, yes.
Then I can believe in eternal life just as well without it.
Corinna has not been listening.
Oh, how nice.
It looks like water, but it is the distilled essence of life.
Rudolph raises his glass.
Gudrun.
Corinna.
1,000 years.
Corinna looks at him seriously.
1,000 years, Rudolph.
Corinna drinks, the glass at her mouth, with pleasure. Rudolph takes hold of her hand and does not let go.
1,000 years.
There is a pause. Conrad reaches for his glass.
I'm in.
He empties his glass.
Thank you.
Bettina hesitates, but then drinks all of her glass. Albert sips at his glass. But this is just water. The script is missing something, the producer had said. The material is interesting, though what does interesting mean? But it lacks blood. Blood? Bettina had asked. 12:39 a.m. Conrad suddenly throws his glass behind him.
But what are you doing?
What's the matter? Are we celebrating or aren't we? The solstice!
We have to stop this mixing.
12:42 a.m.
This contamination. We had a garden and then the aphids came. Nature seeks its own order. And order consists of boundaries. Boundaries exist. That is the law of nature. Purity, clarity. Boundaries are boundaries. Cultures are cultures. That's the way it is. That's how it always was. Beware of mixing. Beware of aphids.
Corinna smiles knowingly. Rudolph is pleased with this smile. Rudolph laughs.
But, Conrad, you know where the old masters got their purple pigment from. From aphids. That is the order of nature. The lower serves the higher. It's always been like that.
Rudolph laughs. Conrad stares into emptiness. Hollow.
Yes. That's how it is. Legions of aphids.
12:44 a.m.
Paris. Moscow.
It is 12:45 a.m.
Suffering. All the greats have suffered. The greats are willing to sacrifice themselves.
12:46 a.m.
Who is bothered about the curve or the breadth of a nose? Those are all mistakes, or let's say, misjudgments. Though
Albert tries to stand up.
So many misjudgments nevertheless do lead to something. They reach what one would call the right conclusion from the wrong hypothesis, don't they? Just as many wrong conclusions are drawn from the right hypotheses.
Albert tries to stand up. He can tell that he should not stand up, but he stands up regardless. Suddenly, everything before his eyes goes black. His knees give way. He falls to the floor, but gets back up again straight away.
Oh, hey.
Is everything all right?
Albert has trouble catching his breath, but is then loud.
You are going to leave my house now!
What?
Out!
Me?
You leave my house now!
Well, really, what a...
That's enough!
I don't know what I can say.
That's enough!
Albert!
You go on and on talking and it's all complete!
If he goes, no, then I go
Albert,
too!
Corinna, please. Albert, I don't know how I... If in any conceivable way I can have... You don't seem to be in such a good way right now, but that was not...
Albert, darling, what's...
But what? What?
Albert sees a full wine glass in front of him. He looks into Rudolph's face. Rudolph thinks, why is he looking at me like that? Albert throws the wine in Rudolph's face. Slow motion. The wine in the air. The wine in Rudolph's face.
Albert!
Rudolph would like to punch the man who has just thrown wine in his face, but he quashes this impulse.
No.
He looks around for something to dry his face with and eventually pulls an old-fashioned gentleman's handkerchief out of his pocket. He clears his throat. He controls himself.
It is time to leave.
I think so too.
I am leaving. I came as a guest. You accepted me into your home and now it seems I am no longer welcome.
No.
Corinna wants to take his hand.
So I shall go.
Thank you, Bettina. And you, Albert, give me your hand. Let's just forget this. No. As you wish. People always meet twice, and the second time is very different.
Why did you do that?
It was the right conclusion from the right hypothesis.
This is my mother.
Yes, I know she's your mother.
But you don't care.
No, no. On the contrary, mothers are the most important thing in life. I wish I still had a mother.
Your mother was never interested in you. Your mother was a cruel woman. My mother is just lonely. And now she's met someone new. You create nothing but animosity. You exclude her.
Rudolf suddenly loses control. He pulls his arm back, ready to slap.
Who do you actually think you are? You filthy Jew!
It is 12:46 a.m. The child wakes up. She can hear the voices of the adults in the living room. Rudolf says, though so many misjudgments nevertheless do lead to something, they reach what one could call the right conclusion from the wrong hypothesis, don't they? Just as many wrong conclusions are drawn from the right hypotheses. The girl slips out of bed and sneaks along the corridor.
Perhaps you should lie down.
Albert is so dizzy he can hardly hear what she's saying to him. His ears are full of noise. Rudolf feels Albert's pulse.
Oh, no, you really should lie down.
Is that better?
Hey.
What?
You were out of it for a while.
What, me? Out of it?
Yes, out of it. You were totally out of it for a while. It was quite scary.
When?
Do you need a doctor?
Oh, Rudolf's a doctor.
You just killed her.
Should we call your doctor?
No, I don't think that's necessary.
Albert's wide open eyes, the slashed, ruined picture on the wall, Rudolf's shirt, the collar without red wine stains, no red wine in Rudolf's face. Rudolf, continuing to take Albert's pulse, Bettina, Corinna, and Conrad around Albert, worrying. Albert tries to catch Bettina's eye and can't.
What?
Oh, he's always ill at Christmas, and always when there are visitors.
You work too hard. You do work too hard. And these tablets, what kind of tablets are they that you...
Marie, his daughter, is standing in the doorway wearing a beautiful long nightie. The child can see that her father seems to be in a bad way. The child says, Daddy, Daddy, are you poorly?
What? Oh, aren't you in bed? Oh, no!
Daddy just felt a bit dizzy for a while.
Why aren't you in bed? Go back to bed.
Dizzy? The girl asks. Why? The girl sees the Christmas tree with all its decorations. She asks, Is it Christmas now? Yes, her grandmother says. Today is Christmas. Really? The girl is thrilled. The girl looks for and finds matches. She climbs onto a chair and starts lighting the candles on the Christmas tree, one after another. The child's beautiful, shining face. The burning match. The burning candles. Look, Daddy, how beautiful. Are you feeling better? The burning candles. Albert's phone makes a noise.
How beautiful. How beautiful. Marie, come here.
She pulls the child to her.
Turn the light off, Conrad.
Conrad turns off the light. Darkness. Only the burning candles on the Christmas tree.
Oh.
The child on her mother's lap. Corinna next to Rudolf, hand in hand. Conrad sits down and smiles at Bettina. Albert has the feeling he can't breathe. Albert... quietly.
I'm not like you think. I just can't.
Bettina smiles.
Neither am I. I'm not like you think either.
A moment of silence. Rudolf clears his throat and stands up.
May I?
Rudolf sits down at the piano. He plays Bach, the well-tempered clavier. Prelude No. 8 in E flat minor, BWV 853. A cold winter night. It continues to snow outside the large windows of the apartment. The Christmas tree, the bright flames of the candles. The focus softens. Slow dissolve. Credits.
In Winter Solstice by Roland Schimmelfennig, Rudolf was played by David Haig, Albert by Sam Troughton, and Bettina by Claire Corbett, Corinna by Susan Brown, and Conrad by Christopher Harper. The voice was Sinead McInnes, and the piano was played by Chris Lee. The play was translated by David Tushingham, and the director was Abigail Le Fleming.
The end.
And you can find more editions of Drama on 3 to listen to online on BBC Sounds. This is BBC Radio 3. It's a little after 9:30, and in an hour's time, Fiona Talkington is here with Radio 3 in concert. That's at 10:30. The conductor and composer Sir David Wilcox was born 100 years ago this month. His Christmas carol arrangements have made his name synonymous with this time of year. Anna Lapwood joins the BBC singers now to celebrate his centenary.